No one said entrepreneurship was easy.
But honestly, let's be real about it.
Hi, my name is Varun Balsara.
And I'm Luke Nellicliffe.
And we are the hosts of the Human Entrepreneur Podcast.
This is the podcast that unmasks the human behind the entrepreneurs.
We uncover the skills they have learned.
Lessons they wish they knew earlier.
And stories that will motivate, inspire, and sometimes shock you.
Entrepreneurship just got real.
Welcome to our show.
Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Human Entrepreneur Podcast. Today I'm absolutely delighted to welcome Peter Potashko onto the show today. Peter is the founder and CEO of Cambio Consultancy, which is an enterprise and social change consultancy working with clients all around the world, as well as being the social entrepreneur in residence within Warwick University, which he has also graduated from. Former to this, Peter has worked in social entrepreneurship education and was the director of Global Social Entrepreneurship Network in Unlimited. And I'm really, on a personal level, really excited for this podcast because, firstly, it's our second tape because the first podcast that I did actually a year ago, I corrupted. It was the second ever podcast we recorded and I mucked up the transfer, so here we go on take two. But also, Peter was my first entrepreneurial mentor and really helped to empower me with a lot of the confidence and skills to pursue my entrepreneurial journey. I'm really, really grateful to have Peter on the show today. And so, Peter, it's a pleasure to welcome you on.
Thank you, guys. It's a pleasure to be back. And I feel like I am back. Like you say, we did a great what I felt was a great podcast a year ago, and sadly, or perhaps positively for listeners, you didn't get it the first time around. So hopefully the pitch is better the second time around.
Yeah, I think the quality hopefully will be a bit better. So yeah, we'll just have to wait and see.
Luke, I genuinely appreciate the vulnerability of accepting the fact that you corrupted the file. And I guess it all worked out, isn't it, Peter? Because we then met, Luke introduced us, and here we are. So,
oh, absolutely.
So, Peter, we always ask our guests, what is your elevator pitch? So we'd love to open up the podcast starting with that question.
Yeah, of course. So, you know, I've been very lucky, really. Often I've been in the right place at the right time in my career. And for 15 years, I've been privileged to work in impact business. So working directly with many different kinds of entrepreneurs at different stages of development, different ages, different geographies around the world. And it's been a big focus of mine, really, to work directly with people and help them unleash their potential to solve sticky problems in the world. So my career has taken me from foundations like Unlimited, the UK Foundation for Social Entrepreneurs, with a particular focus on working with young people and working in universities over a number of years. And then more recently to GSEN, as Luke rightly pointed out at the beginning, as its director. And that was a network of 60 accelerators and incubators in 70 countries around the world. And really, again, it's a case of amplifying the voices of entrepreneurs and maximizing their impact in a variety of different global contexts. And then really more recently, as of 2019, so coming up to 2 years now, I founded my own consultancy called Cambio, House of Social Change. So it is a social change consultancy that focuses really on three things. So one, the core of it is absolutely going back to the concept of working directly with entrepreneurs. So coaching and bringing the best out of them. Secondly, sort of in-house technical consultancy around things like business development, business model, change management, governance, a whole range of things like that. And the third piece is leadership. So looking at the way often more established organizations see leadership, what's the lens through which they're looking at the work they do, concepts around ethical leadership, social innovation, social entrepreneurship as well, being entrepreneurial within a corporate environment. And again, managing change. And of course, what bigger change to manage than the time we're living through now. So that's a little bit about me and the work I've been doing.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that, Peter. And, you know, one of the topics of today's podcast and something that Luke and I really want to deep dive into of change and change management. And so I think when we talk about change management, I think it's a very apt time to talk about it, considering, well, let's address the elephant in the room, COVID. And so if you have to, you know, pitch me change management in like 30 seconds, what would you say change management is all about?
Change management is about being comfortable with the fact that the world is constantly changing. COVID-19 is a catalyst, but the reality is that we live in a changing world, constantly evolving. So it's how do you equip somebody, an individual or an organization of whatever size, with the tools to manage that change?
Lovely. I really like that, short and simple. And I think it goes back to like what, you know, Luke and myself discuss a lot as well, is how do you equip yourself for changing times? You're right. COVID was just an accelerator to so many things that were anyways going to happen. My biggest go-to is education. For me personally, I always thought education would, or at one point, get to a place where you wouldn't need to meet physically. And COVID has literally proved that. University is going online, EdTech is booming. So yeah. But how do we stay comfortable with that change? And how, what's the first step in, you know, walking towards that direction?
The first step, I think, is being mentally and physically fit, ready for the challenge. So it's about giving yourself the space and time to be able to conceptualize what lies ahead for you. Now, of course, it really depends on your context. If you talk about the context of a student going back to university, talk about the context of somebody starting up a new business, or a manager or a senior director at a bigger organization trying to look at what is the medium or long-term future for my business. Fundamentally, the preparation for that period of change is all the same. You need to be comfortable in the environment that you're already working in before you can become comfortable in a new environment, a changing environment. So really, it's about the adequate mental and physical preparation for that. A lot of that is really boring. A lot of that comes down to stuff like getting the right amount of sleep, doing exercise, being mentally prepared, and having processes in place to manage a challenging situation on a day-to-day basis. And of course, a lot of it is more complex in terms of what physical tools and resources and strategic processes am I going to put into place at whatever level of business or whatever challenge I'm facing in life, in order to make me better equipped to tackle that.
And so what sort of, you speak about these like processes, strategies that you need to put in place so that you're ready for this change. Were there any that you had to, that you had before COVID, or like you started when lockdown came about?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to split them into two different types, really. Some of it is soft skill development, and some of it is harder technical aspects. I've already touched on some of the soft skill content. The piece I haven't touched on there, I suppose, is around working in teams. Whether you're a solo entrepreneur, if you like, or again, an individual working within a bigger business, you need to be able to work well in your team. If you're an entrepreneur, your team might be beneficiaries, customers, stakeholders, a board, possibly advisors, a coach, a mentor. That's your team. That's your kind of circle. That's your ecosystem, if I can use that word in this context. So you need to be ready to work with them effectively, and you need to understand what your role in the team looks like. So you need to know what kind of a leader am I. And there's a whole range of psychological tests out there, anything from things like Strength Finder all the way through to the Meredith Belbin test, as Myers-Briggs, a whole range of different sort of harder techniques, if you like, that are tools and resources that you can apply to understand what role suits you better, really. Personally, I like processes that play to your strengths. You know, we can spend an awful long time talking about, actually, I'm not good at this, I'm not good at that, how do I get better? But, you know, we're all born with a certain amount of talent in a certain amount of things. Okay, some more than others, that's a given. But we have talents, we have things we enjoy doing, we have things that we prefer to do. So how can we maximize our strengths in those areas? And how can we, of course, minimize gaps and weaknesses? And a lot of the time that means working with others or bringing talented people into the business, for example. So I put a heavy focus on person-centered approaches. My approach to coaching, for example, is a person-centered one. Even if you are hiring me to coach you on how to start up or scale a business or bring in a round of investment or develop a governance structure, a legal model, fundamentally, I need to know who you are as a person, what makes you tick, you know, what are going to be the potential opportunities and barriers and whatever route we take before I can really help you tackle those technical challenges. So for me, I put the person at the heart of the work that I do.
I think two things that resonate with me the most, Peter, is one, you said, I just want to go back to what you said right now is, you know, you put the human being at the center of everything you do. And I guess that's where, you know, synergies come about with the human entrepreneur as well. And that's what we're all about. I think that's one of the very key points that I want to talk about. And second is, you know, you said you play to your strengths. It took me back to my project management class when you talked about the Belbin test. What do you think are the validity of these tests, Peter? Do you think that these tests are actually something to give you insight into, or just something that you can look through and get some deeper insight? Because I'm guessing at one point, you know, somewhere deep down, there needs to be this thing saying, okay, I'm good at this, I'm not good at that. And then saying, okay, if I'm good at this, then let me just play to my strengths. So, I mean, how does one actually find their strength? Is it just purely by doing these tests, or is it by creating that sort of trial and error, and then you finally find it? Because, you know, very early on in my entrepreneurial journey, I was told that, you know, you have to be a coder to be an entrepreneur. Now, I get the appeal of code, but if you genuinely aren't very cut out for it, you can learn the basics. But then after some time, you need to realize, okay, maybe my passion is sales, maybe my passion is marketing and not so much writing code. And then because of that, then I strengthen my sales and my marketing, and then I get a good co-founder that can code well. So where do you find these skills? Because I'm sure that it's not really, I don't think the answer lies in taking these tests.
Yeah, so these tests are approximations. Actually, what I find valuable is where you can triangulate the results from a number of different tests and say, actually, okay, what's coming up more than once? You also need to have a healthy chunk of self-awareness and an ability to be able to take a step back and ask yourself some pretty critical questions. Now, that is not easy to do. It's quite easy to say. Some people are naturally inclined to question themselves and the world around them. Some people are not. It's really important to be able to do that, though. Whether, you know, let's take a bit, you know, this is a business phrase, really, but whether you, and indeed a sport phrase, I suppose, whether you win or you lose, and we all win or lose to varying degrees every day of our lives, what are we really learning? I mean, there's a famous quote from Nelson Mandela that is, I never lose, I win or I learn. But I think there's something in that, really. And this concept of looking yourself in the mirror, you know, we often hear that in common parlance around actually, you know, something in my life hasn't gone right. I'm going to look at myself in the mirror and understand what could be better. Well, I think that's important, but it isn't just a process you go through when you've had a big defeat, let's say, or something particularly significant has happened in your life. I think that's a process that we need to utilize in our day-to-day lives. It's similar in many ways to another piece of advice that I give to entrepreneurs, which is, you know, we're involved in negotiations every day of our life. Everything we do is a negotiation. In a business, of course, you have to be good at that. These are processes that we don't just open a box to and take out at certain key points. I think it's something that you kind of build into your psyche. It's something that you become used to. So it's a part of training yourself, I think, and growing yourself, which I suppose comes back to that person-centered piece. So the sort of short answer is, I think, there's something in there, but the sort of longer answer is actually it's part of a wider process. I don't think you can simply do a test, figure out what you're good at, and then run with it. I think it's a bit broader than that.
Yeah, I think going back to the whole idea of self-awareness, so key. And I think if you look at it, and if you're looking at change management from a very human-centric perspective, I think the context of change in itself has to do with, okay, how am I as a human being dealing with change? So I definitely agree that, you know, getting that self-awareness is so key.
Yeah, I resonate with that as well. Looking yourself in the mirror. And I think over these last couple months, I've definitely been reevaluating what I'm focusing my time on in terms of, am I using my strengths to the best of my ability? And I think COVID does present opportunities for that, because it forces some doors to close. And you can maybe open some other ones. And I also liked how you said around negotiations, Peter, because I think that's something that I've in some ways been it's been a skill that I haven't been so strong at. So I've been trying to develop and learn it over the time. And actually something that I've been doing is learning to play the board game Catan, which is, I don't know if you know it, but it's this tremendous one at negotiations that Reid Hoffman recommends. But it's kind of a side note. I'm also curious to hear your thoughts in how can you really develop this self-awareness within a team? Because I think it's somewhat easier to develop it within yourself, but actually encouraging other people within your organization to also develop that. How would you go about doing that?
Yeah, it's a really, really good question. And like I said, I think we all work in teams, maybe not traditional teams where you've got a manager and a bunch of people that sit in an office. You know, I think those days in many ways are perhaps gone now. Teams are much more complex than that. I managed a team previously that worked all over the UK. So we very rarely saw each other. And a sort of personal anecdote is that we would put a premium on the times we did meet. So we'd get together in Birmingham, which is, many of you will know it, pretty much in the centre of the UK, easy to get to from any part of the country. And we do that no more than once a month. So we, as you know, doing the maths, we see each other, you know, 10 or slightly more times a year, other than perhaps at set piece events or activities or conferences we were running. So there's a high premium on those individual days we'd come together. We'd spend probably no more than 5 or 6 hours together because, of course, trains and what have you in terms of getting back to where we all lived at the end of the day. It was just about utilizing that in-person time really effectively. You know, we're all human beings that like to spend time with each other. It's social animals for sure. So there's a whole range of approaches to understanding who we are, what makes us tick, what we like doing, what we don't like doing, having fun as individuals, learning about what it is we do outside of our roles. I think that's a really important part of the process, while acknowledging that most of this teamwork is going on where we're not spending time together. We are sending emails, we are on the phone, we are on teleconference calls, all those things which are in some levels dehumanizing, in that you lose something through those mediums to varying degrees. That, you know, different platforms, you lose different things. And it's easy to have a miscommunication or a disagreement that isn't constructive, let's say. Those things can happen.
Sorry to interrupt. Are you saying that like on a Zoom call, for example, there's limitations in terms of the human interaction that can lead to problems? Is that what you meant?
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously on a Zoom call, you know, if let's say the team is 10 people or more, it can be really difficult to know or to read the signs as to when to jump in or when to not speak and when to not talk over somebody. And it can be messy in big meetings on these teleconference platforms. That's a really good example. I suspect everybody has been part of over the last 6 months on our teleconferencing journeys. You know, the technology isn't necessarily quite there yet. Obviously, it will improve and it'll become more commercially available. But yeah, it's a good example. But for me, there's a kind of team sheet rule here, isn't there? Basically, what are the minimum expectation of each other? What do we expect of each other? What is it that we all bring to the table? What can we learn from each other? And what are the red lines? Basically, what can't we do? And if we all hold ourselves to that, actually, it's a better team environment. It's a more productive team environment. But the best teams I've ever worked on have been teams where we have a common understanding. We work hard and we play hard. You know, we have a lot of fun together. Actually, a lot of the time, the work is fun. I came to realize that quite quickly, that this is not a common occurrence, that teams don't often function as well as that. So when you found a team like that, that does work, where you've got processes in place that do work, hold on to that, learn from that and try and implement that. That's what I've done.
So beautiful, Peter. I think there's so much value in what you've just said. And I think I hope our listeners take away what you said. I think setting up processes, playing hard, working hard. I think one of the things that that I completely overlooked in my initial few, you know, when I started my entrepreneurial journey was having fun is not very important. And I think that was one of the huge things that misconceptions that I faced. It's not always work. You might be a workaholic or whatever, and you might want to work a lot, but your team doesn't. And if you don't respect that, there is not going to be respect, there's no reciprocity of respect anyway. So very, very valid point. But Peter, I just want to, put up a situation right now, and I want to just see how you would, kind of react to it. So if there's someone coming to you and they're, they're fundamentally, their business model has been completely disrupted, and obviously now things are changing. On a more human-centric fundamental level, how are you advising someone, say, in a traditional industry, or say in an industry that's worked in a X particular way, now is completely turned over and has to now pivot? What are the different things that you would ask them or want them to reflect on in order for them to manage change effectively and not get too worked up or anxious about it, and deal with it in a more constructive way?
It's a really good question, and there's a number of things I would want to ask them. First of all, I'd want to understand where work is in, again, using this word, ecosystem of their lives. What is it that they're currently working on? What are their priorities? Where are they in their lives? And it's a process, it's not a simple open question that you ask at the start of a conversation. It's an inquiry, really, and it's an inquiry that takes place over a number of sessions. If I'm wearing my coaching hat here, you need to get to know that person. So we talked about that kind of person-centered aspect before. So that's a fundamental for me. Before we get onto the challenge of the specific industry, I suppose I pride myself on being a bit of a generalist in many ways. There's a really good book by David Epstein called Range, which talks about the value of generalists over specialists, particularly in what I feel we're living in, which is a kind of specialized world, where you specialize in something and you get good at it and you kind of follow a career path, or you follow an opportunity, and that's it. But I pride myself in knowing something about a lot of subjects. So I try and keep up with progress of certain industries, let's say, and what are the trends. So I'll take an interest in that, and I'll have an inquisitive mindset, an open mindset to what is it, getting under the skin of what's happening in that sector, trying to empathize and understand, okay, I'm not an expert, but I'm trying to understand and be open to what's happening. Of course, there's research, and there are questions that are direct around actually what are the mechanics of what you're doing. You used the word pivot in the question. Absolutely. How are we credibly solving a problem here? What is the pivot? Let's turn it upside down and shake it around. All of that really good business model analysis stuff. There's a number of pillars that you can look at there. There's a lot of technical support you can give. But I would do all of the rest of it first. It's part of a package for me. And if you don't do that, I think it's really hard to take that person on a journey, because ultimately, they're only going to walk that journey with you, rather, if you're able to do it as a genuine partnership. If you don't travel that distance towards them, then they are not going to be able to walk that journey with you.
Yeah, I think it does make sense. I just want to sidetrack this conversation a little bit. You said, you pride yourself on being a generalist over a specialist. Why is that so?
Really, it's the ability to be able to relate and empathize and have a conversation with people from all walks of life. And when we're talking about business, we are really talking about people and relationships, interactions. Certainly my experience of running my own business has been the business is the people that you talk to. And I built some really powerful relationships actually over the last 6 months, this sort of COVID-19 era that we've emerged into. That really start to sort of pay dividends to me on a business level, simply by virtue of really valuable and enjoyable conversations along that journey. And they've all been very different types of people with different priorities, different types of organization. And it's provided an opportunity at a time when so many parts of the economy have shut down or not been functioning or indeed had to pivot. I feel like it right now, if again, to use a sort of colloquialism, if all your eggs are in one basket, I think that's pretty dangerous right now, because it could have been the most successful basket in the world as an industry. Let's say tourism, take that as an example. It's a pretty tough time for some of those industries now. So having that kind of, a broader understanding, a generalist approach actually can be really valuable right now. And I think I have something valuable to offer.
Yeah, I think, okay, that makes kind of sense, right? Because generalist would typically be then spreading your eggs in different baskets. And I think that's how you kind of hedge your bets as well. And I think it's a safe strategy as well. So yeah, it kind of makes a lot of sense. And I think you'd have seen a lot of dividends in being a generalist, especially during the COVID times.
Yeah. And it kind of gives you the opportunity to pivot as well, I guess, if you're just solely focused in tourism and that's all you know for your whole life and that's what all your skill set is in, then I guess it kind of makes you as an individual open to change and maybe more resilient to change.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Peter, you also mentioned that, you know, you've built very powerful relationships in the last 6 months. But then there's also the question of, you know, how do you build relationships in a digital world? And I think that goes back to the whole managing of change. Initially, you know, you could stare the person in the eye, you know, make contact with them, body language, you know, all of that was a thing back in the day. But now with Zoom calls, and, you know, we were discussing that a few minutes back, how does that relationship building really work? Is there something that you found useful in the way you build relationships now?
For me, a lot of it's repetition. And I'm a big believer in if you do something often enough, you get good at it. And I think one of those aspects is right now, you know, we're all really having to use teleconferencing in order to communicate with people on a regular basis. There have been, of course, exceptions to that. And the opportunity to meet in person is still there, but it's much less frequent than it was before this happened and before March. So for me, part of it is just becoming really familiar with the format, you know, the vehicle for this, and becoming very comfortable with it, and being able to really connect with people inside me. So I know that this isn't as good as meeting somebody in person for a coffee or over dinner or a business meeting, but I also know that it's what we have right now, and I'm okay with that. And you can see so many people that are connecting over this medium, and they're not comfortable, whether it's because they don't understand the way it works, or you know, they don't have the technology in place, or they just don't feel comfortable themselves. So actually understanding the medium and being comfortable with that is the first piece. Secondly, I think it comes back to this idea of empathizing and being sort of a transparent and open window to new ideas, new approaches, wanting to learn, being inquisitive. I think that makes you a really good conversation partner. And add to that, I guess, if you're a generalist, you can say something on a lot of subject matters. And let's be clear, pretty much all first-time conversations are at a high level. You know, you're not likely to get into detail in a first conversation. And often people are really trying to understand what makes you tick as well. So they want to know a little bit about you as a person. Certainly if they're good at making connections, that's definitely something they want to know. So all of that, I think, adds up to really positive ingredients if you want to make positive relationships, if you want to make a good first impression. You know, we always say there's a first impression made in the first 20, 30 seconds. I'm a big believer in that. You're not going to get it right every time. It's a numbers game. But if you employ those kind of ingredients, I think you'll have some really useful conversations. And it's those conversations that lead to business deals, to negotiations, to securing investment, whatever it may be, in the entrepreneurial field and in others.
Yeah, I think it's often this numbers game where you're trying to find more people and build relationships with more people. Then I guess some are going to come and bring success. Some might be like in the future, and some aren't going to work. So I definitely resonate with that, and we certainly employ that approach in the podcast sometimes when we're trying to approach these big name guests. Some do reply to our messages, but some also don't for the time being. They'll be knocking on our door hopefully in a few more years. Actually, my next question sort of goes back to what we were speaking a few minutes ago, because I've been thinking about this whole generalist versus specialist. And one thing that I said was a generalist might be more resilient to change because they have the skills in different areas. But do you think, in your opinion, Peter, do you think a generalist is more resilient to change than a specialist or not? What's your opinion on that sort of comment?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to disparage specialists. There are a lot of specialists out there, and you know, some very good business contacts are specialists, and there's value in that. There's also a high level of risk, though, attached to that. As I said, if you're operating in a particular sector or have a specific skill set, if that's out of fashion, or indeed if there are you know, macroeconomic factors that prevent you from being as successful. You know, I've spoken on a number of coaching calls recently about winds of change, and sometimes winds of change are stronger and more prevailing than anything you can as an individual personal business do to challenge that. We don't like it when we lose agency as human beings. We like to be in control. And unfortunately, plenty of circumstances in life mean that you lose that control. So it is unfortunate that as a specialist, you can be in a difficult position. Now, equally, of course, it can work both ways. You can suddenly find yourself in a really encouraging position. I just asked the major supermarket chains over the last 6 months. Their profit margins have significantly increased. You know, so you can be in right place, right time, for sure. I'm not really trying to say that I think being a generalist is better than being a specialist. Actually, I would rather just argue that the two have value. And it's just worth, I think, in an educational setting or in a business setting, if you hear the phrase, it's just much more important or much more valuable for you to really focus on this skill and get training and development on that and progress down this particular career route, and that's where you're going to be successful. I would just question that, challenge that. I mean, I'm not saying it's not true, but a little bit of sort of self-awareness around actually what is it you enjoy doing, where do you want your career to go, what new skills do you need to acquire to get there. Don't be sort of trapped by your own specialism, I suppose. Make it work for you.
Yeah, and I think you raise a really good point around everyone has their own way of going about it. And I think making it work for you is kind of a nice way of phrasing it. Because at the end of the day, we're all humans. We all have our own skills and strengths and weaknesses. And sort of shifting the conversation on a bit, I want to speak a bit more about resilience. Because I think resilience is so important in this age of change, in this age of COVID, because I think there's been a lot of challenges that we've all faced on like a societal level, but I'm sure on a personal level as well. But also in our teams, and I think I've certainly noticed, like, I've had problems during lockdown and stuff, and I'm curious, how do you go about creating more resilient teams to all these problems that are coming about?
It's a great question, Luke. And we joked actually before the session, didn't we, around what topics I would come and speak about. And I laughingly mentioned why I could come and talk about tennis for you if you want. It's one of my passions. I love tennis. I love a range of sport, actually. And a really good analogy here is, you know, if you're watching in a normal year, the Wimbledon tennis final, and you're watching Federer play Nadal, for example, or Djokovic, or whoever it may be, you're watching the pinnacle of the sport. Yes, it's highly entertaining. Of course it is. But all you're seeing is the tip of the iceberg. You're seeing the delivery phase, you know, the bit where you walk on court and you play the shots. You've got a coach in your corner, you've got an audience, you've got a television audience, all those things. But ultimately, you have the racket in your hand and you're hitting the ball over the net, ideally, in the court. The reality, of course, is that 95% plus really is preparation for that moment. You know, you're working your whole career to get to that point. In business, it's the opposite. We spend 95% of our time doing and 5% of our time learning. And that's absolutely wrong. And to be resilient as an individual or as a team, you need to invest much, much, much more time in your own personal development, in your own team's development, in order to be resilient for when times are tough. And let's be really clear, much of the last 10 years has been a tough period. It's between major financial crises, two of the biggest financial crises of the last 100 years. So it has been a turbulent time in business, for sure. So you do need to be versatile, and you do need to be constantly evolving. It comes back to this idea of living in an environment of constant change. It's about accepting that that's the environment we live in, and then what are you going to do about it? And I think the best way of equipping yourself for that is through good learning and development.
Yeah, that was some beautiful advice there, Peter. Thanks for sharing that. And I think doing teaches you a lot A lot. I mean, you can learn and you can understand stuff in theory, but, you know, practice teaches you how it really works. And I think building experience over that, over a period of time, then obviously helps. My question then is, how do you create that sort of learning culture within the team and grow as a result of that?
Yeah, culture is really key. First of all, you need to have a healthy, positive culture within the team. You need to know what it is that you're all doing, what your strengths are. It comes back to this idea of kind of a team sheet, really, a sense of actually what is it that we all believe in? What is it that is driving us forward? What are our shared values and beliefs, as well as, you know, what are the activities we're actually going to go away and do together? So you have to have a really positive and engaging culture to start with. I think the learning and development kind of flows from that. It's the idea that we all want to get better. We all want to improve together. We all want to hit our goals together. And they're increasingly challenging to hit, of course, as you tick them off one by one. It's about making space for it. It's really not a zero-sum game. It's not that, you know, we either work hard or we learn hard. It's got to be both. You've got to find the balance, and that will vary by team and obviously according to the goals you're trying to achieve. But really, you do need to find time for that in your week. You need to put aside time. I mentioned earlier on in the podcast about sort of mental and physical fitness. It sounds fluffy. It's actually super important. You need to find time if you're serious about the work you do. To better yourself in all those ways. It's manageable. It might be an hour a day where you're focusing on meditation, for example. You're doing a bit of fitness work in the gym or going for a run. But equally, are you reading up on the latest trends? Are you reading online articles, newspapers, books, journals, podcasts? You know, what is it you're doing to improve yourself?
Yeah, I completely resonate with that. I think the first thing you said around the it's not a zero-sum game. It's something that, in terms of being a leader, I think is so important. The fact that you want to be in it to develop the individuals in terms of wherever they want to get out of, why are they working with you, and achieving like their goals, their ambitions. But also what you're saying about like meditation or like other forms of personal development. I think on the podcast, we really try and advocate that strongly because it's so important for every human to undergo those sort of journeys.
You know, Luke, I just want to jump in one more thing. You know, Peter, you spoke about sleep very early on in the podcast. You know, when we were talking about at the very, very beginning, are you sleeping enough? I just wanted to touch on that. How important do you think sleep is and why?
Yeah, sleep is so important and it's often taken for granted. I don't think we understand that much about the mechanics of sleep. There are some really good books out there on sleep and its role. And they all say the same thing, really. That is, you need to get enough of it. You need to be getting, you know, ideally around 7 hours a day. And actually, business, being successful in business or elsewhere or any walk of life, is not actually about getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and checking emails at 5:45 and being on a conference call at midnight. Working hard, working smart is important, but actually finding time for all these other things, of which sleep is at the center, is so crucial because, of course, sleep helps us to regenerate our minds, our bodies. It helps us to put painful memories and difficult days behind us and move on in life, which is often one of the hardest things to do. And I think we can all resonate with experiences in our lives where we've had something very difficult personally, professionally happen to us, and we've tried to figure out a way of moving forward. Sleep plays an important role in that. It helps to order thoughts. And yet most people don't get enough of it. And there's lots of reasons why that's the case. Stress around, for example, the current situation, family lives, work lives, but often just not putting enough time aside for it, not valuing it sufficiently. So we need to reprioritize. I think, you know, we've embarked on this new century, and I think we brought a lot of the 20th century thinking with us. What COVID-19 has allowed us to do is, as a catalyst, as I mentioned earlier, is to really identify what are the key trends that are happening in the world, what are the changes that are happening, what things that we rely on and that we expect to be there won't be there anymore. And for me, one of those key learnings is around actually we need to go back to the essence of what makes us human. It also hits on topics like climate change. You know, we are beholden to the planet we live on. We cannot control the weather. You know, we have finite resources. There are a whole range of things that as humans we feel we have control over, but it's an illusion. We have to live within our human bounds, effectively. And I think hopefully that speaks really nicely to the title of this podcast.
Wow, Peter, that's beautiful.
But Peter, I'm sorry to, you know, be this in a way kind of devil's advocate, and I personally do not subscribe to this that I'm about to say. But just for the sake of argument, if I may, the time that you spend sleeping could be the time that you spend working.
Yeah, I'm happy to be challenged because I think that, you know, there's no one school of thought on this. I think for me, I would come back to this idea of zero sum game. I'm a big believer in working hard, but I'm also a big believer in working smart, in understanding how much can be achieved in a given time period, and how much can you do with alliances, with partnerships, with businesses. Obviously, Elon Musk has built a business empire that sits behind him. So it's not one individual. Quality of decision making is really important as well. And how high quality are your decisions going to be? And if I look at his Twitter feed, I have to ask myself the question, is he making good decisions all the time? I thought I'd just get that in there for those of you that enjoy following social media. But on a serious note, clearly the guy is very successful. I don't think anybody can realistically, based on the evidence, question that. But how sustainable is that in the long term? There are plenty of other successful people. I use an example from acting. So Mark Wahlberg, well, he published his sort of average daily schedule, I think, in the last year or so. Really interesting, I think, in that he goes to bed very early, I think 7, maybe 8 p.m., then gets up at about 2 a.m., I think, every day. Obviously has a fitness regime, given that that's a big part of his brand and the work he does, and obviously any actor, really. Eats the right things, has some time to meditate, does more work in the gym, obviously has a whole range of office work to do, but then actually has time for things like family, has time to learn and develop. Okay, it's a different kind of day in the way it's shaped, but he does find time for all these things. Doesn't Jeff Bezos spend an hour every morning with his family? And isn't that a golden time that he always defends? Well, you know, there are probably things that they're doing that we may not be aware of.
Yeah, it's true. And also that's kind of why we call it the human entrepreneurs. We want to be able to delve deep into that human side of these people and try and open these closed doors. So it's lovely to hear your thoughts on it. So, Peter, we're going to wrap up the podcast now, but before we do that, have some quick fire questions which we'd like to throw at you. So our first one will be, what's your favorite book?
Oh, favorite book. So my favorite book is The Lost Language of Cranes by David Levitt. So it's a little known book written in the 80s at the heart of the AIDS crisis. So I'm a gay man. And that book really spoke to me because it talked about a person's journey. You know, at a time of change, in that case, it wasn't positive social change that was taking place in the US in the sort of mid to late 80s, early 90s, and how that individual faced those challenges together. So there's a lot of parallels with business and managing change in that. But that book really spoke to me. It was a bit of a formative experience for me. So I sort of recommend that as a book that most people probably won't have heard of, but is a very interesting read.
Wow, I love that. That's a really beautiful way of explaining why it resonates with you.
Nice. And so what's your favorite song?
the honest answer here is Whitney Houston's I Want to Dance with Somebody. So that, yeah, I'm sure I should have shared that, but I should have come up with a clever answer than that, I suppose. And the reason I choose that song is that I believe it's 1986, so yeah, a fair way ago now. It was one of the first songs that I heard on kind of like the club scene, I suppose, at university. You know, you get to university and you're at freshers and you're, you know, getting to know people and you're having a good time, and we all do that. And it's just a really positive, kind of vibrant, energizing song. And what I like about that song and what I like about that era is it was, you know, there was quite an exuberance, and the 80s in general were quite a dark time, economically speaking. A lot of very difficult changes in the world. rather in many ways like now, but music and culture were an escape to that. So I think there's quite a lot of similar sort of music coming out now as well. People need an escape from what are some really serious topics. I think we all need that kind of escape.
What's the first thing you do when you wake up?
Oh, the first thing I do when I wake up. Unfortunately, like many people, the first thing I do when I wake up is pick up my phone. And it's a pattern that I need to address. So it's the last thing I do when I go to sleep at night as well, is I put my phone down. And it is in relation to social media, in relation to news, what's happening, what's happened overnight, what I'm interested in, what's happened in America overnight, you know, what's happening in other parts of the world. You know, we all have our apps and our news channels and various newspapers and things that we report into and, you know, give us those alerts as we wake up. The problem with that, I think, is I'd rather be more centered. I'd rather start the day with a meditation and a reflection. And in fact, what happens is that I end up checking news and immediately plugging in. So I'd like to change that around. I know some people refer to it as the kind of tech Sabbath as well, if you've heard of this concept, but there being a day a week where you actually don't use technology. I'd really like to move into that space. I'm not there yet.
And so just the last question is, what are the three tips you would give to our audience who's predominantly young entrepreneurs?
The first tip is there is no one career path. You have power over your destiny, and don't believe that what a particular academic or a parent or a kind of authority figure tells you is your life. Yeah, that's number one. You have agency over that. Number two is be inquisitive. Question everything. It's a much better standpoint than just absorbing it and taking it at face value. You'll learn how to sort of shape that and control that as you get older, and obviously to take in information and to question some things and accept others. But have a questioning mindset. Always be inquisitive. Always be willing to learn. It will keep you open-minded. It will keep you open to innovation and change as it comes at you. And the third thing is, do what you enjoy. Have fun. Life is, you know, this is the old adage that, you know, we roll our eyes at, but life is actually very short. It felt like only a few minutes ago that I was at university, and suddenly, you know, I feel like I'm mid-career, and time goes so, so quickly. Make sure that along the way you're having fun, you're enjoying yourself. You tend to be better at things when you do. And until you know what you're good at, just experiment, try new things. See what your passion is and then run with it.
I love that. I think that's a really good point. And I also particularly resonate with the whole point of agency, and you have the capacity to really shape the direction that you want to go to. So Peter, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast today. Really, really appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure, guys. Thank you so much for your time, and I hope the listeners got something out of it. You can drop me a line. My email address is peter@cambioconsultancy.uk. Same website address, www.cambioconsultancy.uk. And yeah, please find me on social media at Peter Potashko. Always very happy to connect and talk. As I mentioned, a big focus of what I do is around coaching. But always happy to have a conversation with people. I offer a lot of pro bono support out there as well. I'm conscious that a lot of people are starting something up. They don't have any capital now. I don't just charge for all my services. I'm very happy and open to have initial conversations. I live my values in that sense. You know, I talk about having open conversations, open to people coming to me.
Hey, thank you so much for listening to our podcast. If you enjoyed it, drop a review wherever you're listening to this. And for weekly content, subscribe to our podcast channel. And for more updates, check our social media channels attached in the show notes below. Thank you very much.